everybody. My name's Susan. I'm an alcoholic. It's nice to be here tonight with you. This afternoon I went to the memorial for Bill A. Those of you who know him, he was an AA member here in Montreal for many years, then moved to New York City and died in New York City in June. He died young. He was about 50 years old, had about 20 years of sobriety. And I met him through his wife, Audrey, who I knew very early in my sobriety. We were early sobriety buddies. And as we were going through the memorial today, I was having a lot of memories because when I met her, she was single, and then she married Bill, and I used to spend time with Bill and David and Audrey in their country place, and I was remembering all the times that Audrey and I used to have together in early sobriety, and the crazy things we went through. We went to meetings together and helped keep each other sober. And I also remembered what I was speaking tonight, and I remembered the first time I came to this meeting. I guess it was about 17 years ago, and I came with another early buddy of mine in AA, Bonnie. And she was, I think she was only like a couple of weeks sober, and we were sitting somewhere in there, and the meetings were quite big at that time, and somebody came over to her and said hello, and she was so like, oh, somebody said hello to me, and she was all excited, and then they said, do you want to read the 12 steps? She had an anxiety attack. And, I remember her getting up here, and she had to hold on to the table. And anyways, tonight I was talking with Sharon when we went out for dinner, and we were remembering what it was like in early sobriety, how frightening it was if anybody made you do anything, like, you know, and that how it felt to get up in front of people and to talk, and we were remembering our first time sharing, and I had a sponsor at the time, Gloria, who's dead now, but she was sort of a tough love type of sponsor. She used to say to me, you're going to go speak at a meeting, you get down on your knees, you go to the washroom, get down on your knees, and you pray before you share. I thought, oh God. But I was so frightened that I had to do that. I had to go to the washroom, get down on my knees, and I don't know if it helped, but anyway. So it is frightening to get up here and to share. It's not the easiest thing in the world. But I do find it easier now than I used to. And at the beginning, when I used to get up here, it was just awful. I mean, I hated it. And now I still—it's not my favorite thing—but I still feel like I'm giving back something. And at this point now in my sobriety, that's really important that I give back to AA. I didn't understand that concept at the beginning, but I really understand it now. And so I'll sort of, share my experience, my strength, and my hope with you. I started off growing up in a family with a couple of drinkers. One of them died of alcoholism, my father. My mother drank a lot, so I was in a house with two drunks, and I got to see the disease really early on, and it certainly left its mark on me. And I grew up in the 50s, so we didn't know very much about alcoholism in our family and what it was, but we certainly had a lot of family members who were drinking, and my father had been in the war, and he had a lot of post-war trauma from the Second World War. And I used to sit with him, and he would get drunk, and he would just go over his war stories, and I spent a lot of nights doing that with him. And he became violent. There was a lot of violence in the house, and I spent a lot of time trying to protect my mother. And I also spent a lot of time trying to get out of the house. That was like how I sort of survived, was I got out as much as I could and was very busy outside of the house. And I was the kind of kid that made friends easily. I was very shy, and but I made friends easily. I've always been able to do that, so it's kind of a, I guess, a survival gift that I was given. And as I grew up, the alcoholism in my family, it sort of made a deeper groove, and it was very, very difficult for me as I got into my teen years, and I became very introverted at that point, and I left high school, and I sort of took this job in a theater, a movie theater, and I just wanted to be in the dark. I remember I just didn't want to be in life very much anymore. And I was doing a lot of very deep thinking. And from that experience, I started to spend a lot of time in bookstores and libraries, and I was kind of, my search was on. And I was going to find out something. I don't know what I was going to find out, the meaning of life or something. And I remember going to the Atwater Library instead of going to high school. I went to the Atwater Library, and I would read about the lives of saints and martyrs. And much later in therapy, my therapist said, "Oh, you found your first support group." Yeah, I did, you know. And shortly after that, somewhere in my teen years, I started to drink at parties and going to clubs. And drinking was always, it always felt good. I would drink, and suddenly the party lights got brighter, and I was just, you know, I wasn't so shy, and I could be having a good time suddenly. So that was part of what alcohol did for me. Also, it was in the 60s, and at that time, drugs were around, so I did do drugs and listen to music and all that sort of thing that was going on with my culture. And I kind of went through a period, because of the alcoholism in my home, I decided I wasn't going to go near alcohol, and I kind of dived into doing drugs more. But I would periodically binge drink. And then later, I dropped some of the drugs. I didn't drop them all. But I really picked up alcohol, especially when I moved out of Montreal and went to the West Coast. I remember being in a bar, and I just started drinking, and at that point it did something for me that it hadn't done before. It was like it opened something up, and I just felt like everything was going to be okay as long as I could drink. And and that's what I did. I just went to the bar every night, and I drank until I felt good, and then I did all sorts of things in the bar. I don't have to tell anybody who's gone to a bar knows what you do in a bar. And, you know, you end up becoming very intimate with people whose names you can't remember the next day and all that sort of thing. And I drank for about, I lived in Vancouver for about 8 years, and I drank for 8 years, and I got sicker and sicker and sicker as I drank more and more and more. And about that time, I decided to try and stop drinking, and after a very, very, very bad hangover, and my life was in quite a big mess. I was having trouble holding down jobs, and I wanted to go back to school, and I couldn't concentrate, and I was starting to feel sick. My liver was starting to give me problems. And all sorts of things were happening. I was starting to be abusive in relationships in ways that I didn't want to be, and all sorts of things were starting to happen. And I tried to stop drinking, and it lasted for about a week. I had a little pattern at the time. I would meet someone, get into a relationship, and at the beginning of the relationship, I would just drink. And then at the end of the relationship would end, and I would stop drinking for a week until I met someone else, and then I would start drinking again. And then that would end, and I would stop drinking. So it was a very strange pattern. It was sort of backwards in a way. But and then that pattern sort of dropped away, and I just drank. I mean, it didn't matter where I was. And I wasn't feeling very well. So I also I was getting calls from my mother about my father, whose drinking was escalating, and he was very, very ill. And I remember one time I'd gone for a very long sort of a binge, and towards the end of it, I was sort of in that place where you're hallucinating a little bit, and I was sitting in the room, and I remember suddenly seeing myself sitting in the opposite end of the room looking at myself, and I looked very much like the way I'd seen my father look when I was young, and it just frightened me very, very much, because I realized what was going on suddenly, like I got it, that I had a problem. And so again, I tried to stop drinking. And I had just ended a relationship, and I stopped drinking. And a friend of mine called me up and knew that I had just broken up in this relationship, and asked me if I'd like to go out on a date. And I really liked this person a lot, and I thought it would be really nice to go on a date. And so they came and got me in a car, and we went off together, and where I was taken for this date was they took me to an AA meeting. That was our date. this person I was having this date with was a comedian, a stand-up comedian. Like, that was their job. And I thought this was very funny. I thought it was terrible. And I thought, well, you know, it's a comedian. Of course, she's going to take me to an AA meeting. And and that was my first meeting in Vancouver. And I don't remember very much about it. I just remember there was just all this smoke in the room. I couldn't see the person at the front of the room. He kept talking. And after that, I joined a group of women that were sort of feminists, and they decided that AA was politically incorrect, that we couldn't go to AA. So we used to get together in this house, and and then we all drank again. So I said, well, may not be politically correct, but at least people stop drinking in here. So actually, and at that time, my mother called me again. My uncle called me to tell me that my father had just died. He died of a heart attack, and he was coming off of a long binge of drinking. I was in Vancouver at the time. He lived in Montreal, so I flew back to Montreal. I still remember the state I was in when I left. It was winter. It was February, and I had no winter clothes because I was in Vancouver, and a friend lent me a coat, somebody lent me boots, and somebody drove me to the airport, and I remember someone had brought me a bowl of brown rice with chopsticks in it. And that was how I got on the plane. I got on the plane with a bowl of rice with chopsticks in it. And a coat and boots. And I didn't have a bag. I didn't have anything. I was just like going to Montreal. And when I got to Montreal, my friend picked me up and took me to the funeral. And I got to see my father and say goodbye. And it was an open casket, and I really got to see what he looked like. He drank and never was able to get sober, and it really showed me what it looks like if you don't ever get sober and you don't have a program. And at that point, my mother, who has also been drinking, was a mess. And I had to stay in Montreal to sort of take care of things as best I could. And my mother fell down and broke her arm, so I had to live with her, which was pretty weird. But it was the best thing that had ever happened, because when I did that, I sort of decided, well, maybe I should get sober. And then I spent that summer drinking so heavily that I didn't know if I would be able to help my mother or stay there or anything. I think it was just part of my way of not dealing with my father's death and the grief I was feeling. But at some point, after my mother had fallen down and I had to go live with her in her house, I start having panic attacks, like really serious panic attacks. And in one of them, I was convinced I was having a heart attack. So I took myself to the Montreal General and emergency, and I just went in and said, I'm having a heart attack. Or it feels like I'm having a heart attack. So they immediately took me in and hooked me up and did all the tests. And the doctor came in and told me that I was not having a heart attack, but that the muscles in my heart he said, you must be feeling an enormous amount of stress. Are you under a lot of stress right now? And I just started crying. And I said, I can't stop drinking. And that was the first time I'd ever really said that out loud in that way, and with the real feeling behind it that I had to do something. So I just remember him saying, well, we won't keep you here. And he said, but you need to get some help. So he suggested I try AA, and he gave me a number of a place where I could do some therapy, which I did go to. It was a short-term thing, 10 weeks. And I called AA, and there was a man on the phone who answered the phone, and he told me about a meeting in Ville Saint-Laurent, which is where my mother lived. So I went to the meeting. He met me at the meeting. He was an older man, and I was so scared. I just remember going in with a meeting that he met me at the door, and he was so kind. He died a little bit later on, and he sat with me in the meeting beside me, and he was very, you know, trying to help me. All I remember were these hairdos of these women, like they were like country and western singers. I don't know, like these. And I just thought, I can't do this. Like, I can't be here. And so I couldn't. Somehow I just felt like I'm not going to fit in with these people. I can't. And so I left there, and somehow I got to the conference. There was a conference going on, like the annual AA conference convention. And I went to this thing. I don't know how I got there, but I went to it, and I went to a meeting in the convention, and I started to feel as though I could do this. I could go to AA, and I found a home group shortly thereafter and walked into that room, and it was just so frightening. I don't know how I did it, but so anyone who is coming to a meeting the first time or close to your first time, I really understand how you feel. It's very, very courageous, and it really shows that we really do have a desire to stop drinking for us to be able to make it into these rooms. And I was so happy to find just a little group where I felt okay. You know, it was a small group, met twice a week, the Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesdays was like a discussion meeting, and on Thursdays we read the big book. It was a big book study. And then when we finished reading through the big book, we did a 12 and 12. And for the first year, I couldn't read out loud. It was like I tried and I would just cry or go blank. I couldn't read. I couldn't do anything. And I couldn't figure out how people could get up and talk and how they could read. And it just all seemed very mysterious to me. People are so well, like how do they do that? But I just stuck around and kept coming back, and I got a sponsor who frightened me. I was really frightened of her. So I did everything she told me to do. And for a while I started to smoke pot. She had also been an NA, and so suddenly I decided I had to confess. I remember telling her, and she said, if you smoke pot, you're going to have to go to NA, and you're going to have to go with me. And that was the end of my smoking. I just thought, I'd rather stop smoking than go to NA with her. So that worked. And, you know, I just did everything that was told. They told me to go to a lot of meetings. I went to a lot of meetings. I bought a big book. I went home at night. I couldn't sleep because I was so anxious. And I've told this before, but I had a pink marker and I would read my big book and I would just underline every sentence until I fell asleep, and which usually didn't take long. So I always, you know, I thanked the big book because it was sort of like my early sedative in AA. It did help me rest. Now, though, I'm part of the Big Book study again, I read the Big Book. I actually get a lot out of it. It doesn't matter how many times I read it, there's always something new, or I'm seeing it from a different angle. I have such gratitude for AA. I've met so many wonderful people in here over the years. And when I look back at how I felt when I first came in, I just thought I could never stand up and talk or be a part of this, or I didn't get it. And people seemed to be having fun and getting sober. And then finally, slowly, little by little, you know, people started to come and talk to me, and I kind of got back that thing I had when I was a kid, being able to be friends with people again. And I think in early sobriety I was really, really worried and concerned because I sort of felt that once you got sober you lost your sense of humor. Like it just, you didn't have a sense of humor anymore, and that's part of being sober. Which luckily isn't true. It took about a year or so before not quite a year. I'd say maybe 9 months, 6 months, 9 months, and it started coming back. And then I started to laugh, and I used to have fun at meetings. I worked the steps fairly soon because I was lucky enough to get a group early on where we did that. Like, we read the steps, we talked about them. And I used to go to people's houses in AA, like other women alcoholics, and we would actually read the steps and try and figure out what the hell they were about. So it was a nice support system. I had a very good early support system, which I'm very, very grateful for. I was taught well by my early AA friends and members how to do this program. But it was really up to me. I had to do it. I mean, nobody was doing it for me. I had to go home and, you know, read the steps and read the book and think about it. And it was about change. There were a lot of things I had to change about myself. Like how to become honest. Like, there was a new concept. How to, you know, not drink. Like, that, first of all, was like the biggest challenge. I found that if I just went to a lot of meetings, it helped. And I went to a lot of meetings really feeling shitty a lot of times, you know, like nervous, anxious, wanting to drink. I would have rather done anything than have to come to a meeting. But somehow, beyond, you know, my mind, I stayed sober. I met people with good sobriety too, which was great. And, you know, I developed the sense of a higher power. At the beginning, I just sort of gave up about God. Like, I decided I wasn't going to try and figure it out anymore. Like, it didn't matter about figuring it out. I just had to do it. And, you know, and I heard everything in the meetings. I went to a lot of meetings, and everybody had their own idea about God. And that was the beauty of AA. You could choose a God of your understanding. You know, we had one guy in our group, and it was... I mean, he's lying in bed with the light bulb, and that was his higher power. Oh, wow. And, you know, he was sober. He stayed sober looking at his light bulb, praying to his light bulb. So, and I, you know, I'd come through a spiritual phase in my early 20s where I got involved in meditation and yoga and all that stuff, and I had a lot of ideas about it, but I gave all that up, and I decided in early sobriety I took the group as my higher power, which worked really well. I just decided that I would go along with what people who were sober told me, and that worked at the beginning. And then slowly, as I worked the steps, I started to get a feeling of a higher power. That there is something inside and outside of me that cares about me, and that was a great feeling, because I spent so much time thinking about God, you know, trying to figure it out, and this was not about thinking. This was about feeling it. And I also noticed, just through the example of people in AA, that people cared about each other in AA. Like, they helped each other stay sober. They were there for each other. They went out of their way to bring people to meetings. We put up with each other. I mean, I remember some meetings, like a discussion meeting where this one little member who was like 4'10", who just like every time, every week, she would just, it was her turn to share, and she just told us all like how full of shit we were, how stupid we were, and we were just all fish. He's coming back, and we have to like take it. And so there were a lot of lessons to learn in sobriety, and then a lot of things happened. My mother died, and I had to deal with that sober. And, you know, I got jobs, I lost jobs, I got into my first sober relationship. Now that was just like being on acid. Like, whoa. And then that ended, and, you know, there was a lot of people dying, sorrow, but there was a lot of joy too. And I went through a period when I was about 7 years sober where I stopped going to meetings, and I got into a bad space, and then I had a very bad crisis, and I was in a lot of emotional pain, and that threw me back into AA, and I got active again. And I stayed active for a while, and then I went into another lull a few years ago. And it was actually Sharon who said to me, "Well, are you doing any therapist?" I said, "No." So that was when I decided to join a group again. And I got myself a home group. And that's like the best thing I've ever done. Like, I was drifting off somewhere, you know, in that gray zone. And in my head again, and, you know, all the crazy thinking was all starting all over again. And so I got involved in a group, and it's a big book study, and it's downtown, and I like the characters who come to meetings downtown. It's always lively. And I'm, you know, reading the big book again, and I'm active in my group. I also took a little shift on the telephone, so once a month I answer the telephone and try and help another suffering alcoholic if I can. And I guess I'm very happy to be a member of AA today. I mean, I've been in and out now. With, you know, I haven't drank in, it's going to be 18 years. So, but I've been through a lot of emotional ups and downs. It hasn't been always easy. But I feel incredible gratitude. And just today, seeing Bill A's sort of his memorial, and we heard him share his story, and I just felt so much gratitude to be part of this. It's an amazing, amazing journey, and I hope I'm here till I crook. And I hope I see a lot of you here too. So thanks a lot for letting me share this with you. Thanks.